Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. Find out why so many people have been with the Purdy family, taking care of their insurance needs for a long time. They will take care of your needs as well. Care very much about families in our area. Needy Family Fund. If you can donate, that would be great. Right now, over $14,000 donated. A lot more to be done. A lot of families in our area. We call it the Needy Family Fund for a reason. Whatever you can do to donate and help out is tremendous. There is no such thing as a small donation. Do not ever sit there and listen to some of the amounts that Sarah talks about, which are certainly significant amounts, and say, well, gee, I can only give. There's no such thing as only giving. You give whatever you can afford, and you're helping out somebody else. It's a tremendous gift. And they're all equal. They just all add up together to make for one huge donation to help out somebody or groups of individuals in our area. Tremendous. And don't forget, Santa's on tonight, 6 to 7. And in fact, every 6 to 7, Monday through Friday, between now and Christmas Eve night.
Steve, got Coach Paulson on the line for you. Talk a little Bucknell basketball.
Dave, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Great to be on the show. I'm glad I didn't get pushed aside for like a curling pond spiel or something like that this week.
Well, I'll tell you right now, Kevin's a big curling fan.
I watched a lot of that. I'm ready for the Olympics to start in curling. I get excited about that.
Well, the level of exercise invoked in curling would be right up Kevin's alley.
That's exactly why I like it. It's the only Olympic sport that I can still do.
Except you know what, Dave? I talked to Kevin's wife, right? And the fact that in curling you need brooms, he says there's no way he can handle that.
He's helpless. Yeah.
There's no outlets on the ice.
Yeah.
If they find right. one of those power curlers, then you kind of fail.
I'm your man.
Hey, big finish for you against Columbia. Nice 5-point win. Tell us a little bit about the ingredients that you like as a coach that made that happen.
Well, you know, Steve, we weren't really playing, you know, exceptionally fluidly on offense. A lot of that is a tribute to Columbia, you know, a good defensive struggle. But what our guys did is they hung in there, really defended, and then they were taking away the three-point shot. We drove the ball to the basket very, very effectively, got ourselves to the foul line. We shot 20 foul shots in the second half. Chris Haas made two big driving plays late in the game, and Ryan Hill was terrific in the second half.
And that's how you get that 5-point win. This follows up a win over previous 8-1 Kent State. You did that one on the road, Dave. What did you see in that road setting that you liked?
Well, I just liked our resilience after losing two in a row, a tough one on the road to Mount St. Mary's and a tough one at home to Princeton, where we had not played well in either game. And there was no crying or no hanging their heads. The guys responded well in practice. We were down 7 points midway through the second half at Kent, and there was no panic. And in both the Kent game and the Columbia game, we made our runs with four of the five guys on the floor. Guys were coming off the bench.
And that makes a big difference for you because you have worked very hard. You've been very conscious in trying to build bench minutes. Are you starting to see the payoff because of what you just talked about?
Yeah, there's no question about that. You know, earlier in the year, Stephen Casper was nothing short of phenomenal. And Ryan Hill didn't play as many minutes. In the last few games, you know, Stephen has been fine, but to be honest with you, Ryan has been equally as effective, if not more. So, you know, the minutes have balanced out a little bit more, and that's what we're trying to get our guys to buy into. It could be a different night, or a different guy or two every night.
7th in the nation, at least at one stage last week, in free throw percentage. I know against Columbia it was a struggle to get to the line at times, but still the ability, your team zeroes in on the free points part, and for you as a coach, that's got to be big.
Well, there's no question. Like, we drove the ball well in the second half, got to the line. We have shot the ball well from the foul line. Hopefully that'll continue. You know, we certainly put a lot of emphasis on it. That's how you win close games. Don't turn the ball over. Don't foul the other team. Don't give up second shots and make your free throws, and then you're going to have a chance to win the close one.
How do you want to handle the exam break here, Dave? What kind of time can you even get with them during exams, and when do you really get them where you know you have them all to yourself?
Well, I told Kevin while we were waiting to get on the air, like right now I'm on the road for 3 days recruiting,
right.
So it's a chance for me to see some guys. Otherwise, very, very hard to get out to see. For the guys right now, they're doing some individual work, but just recharging their batteries mentally and getting ready for exams, and then we'll start practice on Thursday, and we'll practice for 4 days, take a day off, and then 3 more days getting ready for Marist. It's a fine line because we need to work on the next layers and what we need to do defensively and offensively, but it is a tough time for the guys. So we try to be really intense, really focused, get them in and out in an hour and a half, and they need that break, to be honest with you. They need to blow some steam physically in the midst of their final exams.
Yeah, it ends up being a 13-day span between games, Dave. So when you do get them where they're finally all yours, are you going to go double sessions at all? How do you want to handle that?
Yeah, you know what? I really don't do that, Steve. I think it's hard to go that hard, that long, do it twice. I think earlier in my career I did more of that and got more guys injured.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to, if you work your rear end off for 2 hours a day, that's a lot. What we will do is Sunday, none of them have exams. We'll get some local high school officials and we'll do an inter-squad scrimmage to kind of break up the midway point of the 2 week break. We'll score it, we'll stat it, we'll film it, we'll switch the teams up, make it really competitive to try to make as much of a game like atmosphere as we can. You know, in the midst of that break.
You mentioned you're in the recruiting part of it right now. With all the success that Bucknell has had, you know, the success you personally have had there at Bucknell and so forth, do you see doors? I know you have academics to deal with, and that's important. I'm sure it whittles down the pool for you. But are you seeing just a much better reception that when Dave Paulson and Bucknell walks in and we go, hey, wow, Bucknell, know a lot about him?
Well, you know, I think we're getting a great response. Now, I don't know if we'll ever, you know, in my first year, we were able to find Mike Muscala, and we were very, very lucky. But he was a little under the radar. But I will say this, you know, in the group that we signed at the early signing period, we signed the two guys from the state of Pennsylvania that we rated the two highest prospects who could both academically gain admission to Bucknell and could be impact players. J.C. Shaw out of Abington Heights in the Scranton area, and Nana Fowland out of Berks Catholic in Reading. And both those guys were courted by teams from conferences that some might rate as higher-rated conferences. But we're able to land them, and I think because of the success that we've had and because they can see that you don't have to settle on the basketball front coming to Bucknell, and you're going to get just a world-class education.
You're 5-4 at this stage going into the break. 6 of those 9 games have been away from Soica. So when you evaluate your team and factor that in, what do you like, and then where do you want to be better as you then go to the second half of the season?
Well, I like the fact that we're 5-4. And you know, I've always emphasized you don't get caught in wins and losses. Talking about improvement. But with the stretch we had to come out 5-4 is pretty darn good. I like the fact that our guys are really bought in. We're continuing to improve. We play a lot of different people. We're playing completely different on the offensive end, and our guys have picked that up fairly well. But we need to continue to develop the next layers offensively. We need to get better defensively, and we need to keep adding depth because the one thing that we haven't quite figured out yet for sure is who's going to be there for us every night. We've had guys play great one night and not so great the next. we need to develop a collective level of consistency.
Do you look at the first 10 to 12 minutes of a game, Dave, to give yourself that feel as to who is on that night and who isn't?
Well, I don't even know sometimes if we can figure it out in 10 or 12 minutes. I mean, you know, to be very candid with you. But basically, we're going to play our 10 or 11 guys in the first half and then see what they do. But even, you know, like the other night, Ryan Hill played fine in the first half. We put him back in the second half. He was just terrific. And there were a couple times I had Steven Casper at the scores table to go back in, and I called him back. Forget it. Hill's playing. You know, let's just keep rolling with it. Yeah. So there's a little bit of just kind of going with the hot hand that might be something that we do the entire season.
Well, good news. We have no curling interviews next Monday either, so we'd love to have you back.
All right, that sounds good, Steve.
Okay, Dave, thanks so much.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Dave. Boy, you can't like Dave Paulson. You can't like people. No question about that.
You know what, Steve? He was talking about the young man from Abington Heights, JC. I'll tell you what, that young man is a solid basketball player. Mm-hmm. I saw him in the first round of the state playoffs this past year, and I'll tell you what, he really, really, really knows how to handle the basketball.
So that's a big get, no question.
Absolutely.
And when are we going to start getting Olympic interviews on?
We still have, 58 days to the Olympics?
Yeah, I don't know. Really, most Americans don't know.
I'm just curious to see if I'm right with that.
It starts February 6th. It's irrelevant.
I think it's 58 days.
It's great. Still calculating?
Yes, I am.
31 plus 6 is 37. Today is...
Don't make
today's
me think.
What? Oh, come on. You know, dog. Today's the 9th. Come on, you can do this. 22 days plus 37 is 59.
See, it's easier for me just to go to the countdown clock and see 59 days, 2 hours, 41 minutes.
I don't need the countdown clock. We're done. All right, so...
And that'll be the Olympics coverage for the day. Thanks for joining us.
There's no juice out there for it.
No, you're right. There's no... Listen, you're not going to get an argument from me about that. There's not a ton of interest in the Olympics. I find it intriguing because it's sports that I don't get a chance to see a whole lot.
I'll watch some of it. But you know what? I mean, this is where they luck out. You notice the Olympics don't start until after the Super Bowl's over.
Yes.
So that's a big part of this. And, you know, and you're all for guys being on cross-country skis with weapons.
It is rather intriguing to me. But you can't tell me that watching people slide on their backs at like 85 miles an hour on a huge sheet of ice isn't interesting.
I saw Sean Carey do that the other day, but it was an accident. We'll come back with more here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2010 Chevy Equinox Limited, the most affordable crossover, just $22,996. 2010 Ford Explorer XLT, new tires, new brake linings, just $21,997. A Pontiac Torrent GXP, four-wheel drive, peace of mind, $15,554. 2011 Hyundai Sonata Limited, fully serviced, $17,498. And a sporty, like new, Subaru Impreza sedan, under 8,000 miles. Lowest price promise, $27,495. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive and see what your trade is worth, too, at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
You just don't think about insurance. You buy a home, you take out a policy, and you forget about it until something happens and you need it. Then you think about insurance a lot. My agent recommended insurance from Selective. Insurance for our home and property, jewelry, even the food in our refrigerator. Selective thinks about everything, so I don't have to.
Selective. Response is everything. Get to know us at Selective.com.
Get to know your local Selective agent. Pretty Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or at PrettyInsurance.com. Find out what Pretty Insurance can do for you.
It's Jamaica, that we know. snow here, man.
This is Jamaica.
I asked the Jamaican bobsled team in a text this morning whether they thought it was a forward lateral in the Steeler game. They said absolutely.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Even your Olympic friends think.
It doesn't matter.
And you know what they said? No dog in the hunt, man.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Now, I got 59 days for another sport to really get excited about, and then we'll segue into pitchers and catchers, and it'll be a whole new season of optimism for baseball.
Really? Okay. So, Michigan State beat Ohio State to win the Big Ten championship. And it was a game of runs. You're talking about Michigan State 17 straight, Ohio State 24 straight, and then you follow it up with 17 straight by Michigan State. If you were a championship team on a neutral field, you take the lead and you finish the job. You put the game away. Instead, a championship team loses the lead, comes back, ties it up, takes the lead again, and the right team is going to the Rose Bowl. Okay? And I don't want to hear this if they played 100 times, blah, 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 blah. You played once, and guess what? You didn't get it done.
My apologies to Ohio State fans, but I was rooting for Michigan State.
Well, I mean, either way, it was going to be, I think Michigan State was going to the Rose Bowl regardless, from what I understand.
Yeah, that's the way I understood it, too, especially when they were talking about that night.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the way I understand it. They were going to the Rose Bowl no matter what. But they seized the moment, and that was the part that was so impressive, was how they seized the moment. And the part I was concerned about when it came to Michigan State as to how they play was I did not know. I knew they had the defense to win a championship. I did not know whether they had enough offense. And to their credit, they absolutely had enough offense to win. And that, to me, Connor Cook played well. Langford kind of struggled to get whatever yards he could for a long time in that game. But in the end, Langford, you know, made a couple big runs. The Ohio State defense, which I thought was good most of the year, was awful against Michigan State. It was awful against Michigan, and the same thing against Michigan State. I mean, out of position, Shazier's a heck of a player. But out of position, the secondary really didn't play well. And then, of course, it turns out that after the game, Urban Meyer's critical of his team and so forth. I mean, you know, this is how you lose with grace?
See, that was why I rooted against Ohio State, quite honestly. Not a big Urban Meyer fan.
Well, he didn't handle it well. All right, no question about that.
And you know what? If you're laying money down on the Discover Orange Bowl, I think I lean toward Clemson because I don't know that Ohio State's head is going to be into playing that game. I know it's going to give them about 3 weeks to think about it or so, but I'm not sure they're going to be all there to play that game.
Yeah, but they haven't played in a bowl game in a couple of years. You would think that going in there, you know.
Well, that you'd think that would be enough emotion alone, right?
Right. I mean, that should be enough. They haven't played in one in a long time.
Very true. And if you're the BCS right now, you have to be thinking, okay, final year, we got away with it.
Well, I think Ivan Mazel of ESPN.com wrote the, wrote the piece that I like about all this, and that is patience. The one thing that we in the media never have, we always, and the same thing with the fans. Everybody wants to know what the answer is right away, and you have to let it play out and let it be, and you have to be patient. Well, And that's something that we never have. Now, I talk about that, okay? But I'll be frank with you. I don't, that you have to let it play out. You get mad at me when I say that.
Well, the Northern Illinois situation played itself out with Bowling Green beating them.
Yeah, and that opened up the door, and I think that's why. Now, the only conference that didn't end up with two would be the Pac-12, and a lot of people will tell you they think the Pac-12 was the second-best conference this year, but they beat each other up where you have a two-loss team representing you in the Rose Bowl. They're the only one that did not end up with two in the BCS. We're going to talk more about this in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can go to purdyinsurance.com. Kevin already projecting the Steelers draft pick.
At this point, I'll take anybody, so it doesn't really matter. Matter of fact, I might be willing to trade the first round pick if I were the Steelers for multiple picks in the second and third round.
What a bitter guy.
Hey, you never know. There might be another Ditka out there that just wants to go play golf.
Ditka. They retire his number tonight. Ironically, with the Cowboys, the team he won the Super Bowl with in Super Bowl VI when he caught a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Auburn and Florida State. Kevin's already made his pick. He's picking Auburn to win the game. The other BCS matchups, Alabama-Oklahoma, no intrigue. Baylor-Central Florida, no intrigue. Stanford-Michigan State, some. Ohio State-Clemson actually has some juice to it. But that's it. In Alabama-Oklahoma, no. UCF-Baylor, no.
I don't know. UCF Baylor is intriguing to me.
Oh, come on.
And I know
that
to nobody else.
That game is not intriguing to anybody outside of Orlando and Waco. That game isn't even intriguing in Austin.
I understand that, but as we talked about last year at the same time, I like those games that involve teams that don't often get into a bowl game or a major bowl game at that. I find those things interesting. I know most people don't when they watch on TV.
The ratings say that once again you're in the minority.
Yes, I totally agree and totally accept that.
Last year you were going on and on about Northern Illinois, which for a while gave them a game. Okay, but like for example, let me give you an example. Jordan Lynch is a really good football player. I've watched him on and on and on. We've heard about Jordan Lynch, right? And then maybe he's one of the final five candidates for the Heisman. He wouldn't start here. He wouldn't have started here last year, and he wouldn't start here this year.
No. I think Northern Illinois, Utah State, and the Poinsettia Bowl is entertaining, too. Now, if you haven't seen Chucky Keaton yet, he's entertaining to watch. I take it you disagree by the sounds of silence.
You're the only person in America outside of DeKalb that is touting that game.
I'm just saying, I saw Utah State early in the season and then watched a little bit of the game with Fresno State. He's interesting to watch. I didn't say I would sit there and watch the game from beginning to end. I just think if you haven't seen him, he's rather entertaining to watch as a quarterback. He moves around a lot. He's friends with your buddy up in Seattle.
Wow.
Well, I mean, of the early bowl games, are there any bowl games that you're going to be overly interested in? Probably not. You know, you've got to find a reason to watch these early bowl games.
USC Fresno State.
I think that's a very good game on the 21st. The Royal Purple Las Vegas Bowl.
It's also the Hawaii Bowls, Oregon State, Boise State.
That could be entertaining.
I think so, too.
That's a nice Christmas Eve.
Yeah, you know, a little cheese log.
That's right.
Crackers, some beverages.
Have the fire going.
Yeah, sit there and watch USC with their third coach of the year. Take on Fresno State and see one of the top three or four quarterback prospects in Carr, Derek Carr. We are all gathering, by the way, for the official unveiling of the bowl season. We're all going to be at Kevin's for the Gildan New Mexico Bowl. Colorado State, Washington State.
I'm sorry, I got a basketball game.
Even better. I think the odds now have been open to having a good time. You're upset they want to trade Dominic Brown.
I think that is borderline crazy.
When I look at the Phillies, I don't look at starting pitching as being the number one issue. I think any staff that has a Cole Hamels and a Cliff Lee automatically has... automatically stops losing streaks.
I think Pettibone could be a good young pitcher, too. Is he at the level of those two right now? No. But I think he has potential.
See, and that's what baffles me about the must-get-a-starting pitcher. I think what the Phillies need, the Phillies do need a closer. Jonathan Papelbon, I know the 29-33, but I think anybody who watched him the last 3 months of the season can't be really comfortable because he's not blowing hitters away. And that fastball has been his bread and butter almost his entire career. And then he's mixed in a couple of things along the way. You know, the forkball he's mixed in, a little bit better curveball from time to time. But when Detroit didn't want him and the Red Sox didn't want him back, and at that time in July, Yohara had not established himself. You know, I mean, Koji was just getting going as the closer. He was the third closer of the year for the Red Sox. But the Red Sox said no, they didn't want him. I think they probably thought Koji would do well enough. But Detroit absolutely needed him and didn't take a bite. I mean, that's an issue. And then the middle relief part. They have not solved the middle relief part for 2 years. You don't trade a Dominic Brown for middle relief. You go out and you find middle relief. Finding middle relief is a real dice roll. You really kind of, you go with guys based on some reputation, some stats, things like that, that you like. And you hope that maybe they have one of the top two or three years in their career with you. That's why the middle relief part on so many teams is interchangeable. You know, that setup role, that sixth, seventh, and eighth inning guy. The Pirates had a great year this year with guys, in fact, the last 2 years, with guys in that role. Brian Morris, Tony Watson, guys like that. Now, Watson was developed through the system. He started here in State College.
See, I think there's even bigger issue than even middle inning relief is you look at right now the Phillies have six infielders on the roster. Three of those six were born in the Carter administration and one in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is an aging infield with Howard, Rollins, Utley.
Mm-hmm.
And then Francis is, like I said, he's probably the next oldest to those three guys.
Right.
I mean, well, I really have concern about the infield.
Yeah, I can understand. You know, I can understand that part. Now, when you look at Rollins, steady 270, 275 hitter.
He's not going to steal the bases he used to, but he's still keeping pitchers watching him. But he's not going to steal the bases he used to.
I thought when Utley got into the lineup last year, I thought he gave them some jump. Ryan Howard is too expensive for anybody to take. And last year, and you weren't on the show when I did this, you were off when it was getting close to the trade deadline. And Howard was already hurt. I said, and I laid out five guys that if you could trade one of the five guys, who would you trade? Howard was not one of the names. The reason he wasn't one of the names was that
nobody would want to take the salary and the injury problem.
Yeah, but he was already hurt. So, in other words, you can't really take a guy that's not going to come back and play for you. All right? We had maybe, I'd say, 7 to 10 callers. Okay? The vast majority said right away they'd trade Howard no matter what. People have had enough. They've had enough with him, at least based on the listeners on this show.
Well, I mean, he's getting paid an awful lot of money, and the performance isn't there. And if the performance isn't going to be there in Philadelphia, they're not going to put up with it long. Philly fans are not patient.
Well, no fans are patient. Okay? Not even the fans of the Houston Texans are patient.
But the infield, I mean, the Phillies are focused on, the management seems to be focused on starting pitching. I think there's a big problem in the infield, and I don't think the outfield is that comfortable right now. I mean, you picked up Bird, but I'm sorry, that's not a glove in the outfield. It might bring a bat every now and then, but you have Brown, not the best glove in the world, but a decent bat. Mayberry, I'm not quite sure where he fits in. Ben Revere is probably the best outfielder all the way around on the Phillies team. That's debatable, but that's my opinion.
Mayberry is probably a fourth outfielder on most teams.
Absolutely.
And I think he's a fourth outfielder on this team.
But I think Revere in center field is probably one of the best. And we saw what happened when he got hurt and the Phillies tried to piecemeal the outfield.
Right. No question. No question. I would think, to me, starting pitching of all the areas, I'm okay with. Okay? But I would like to find a closer that I could depend on. Now, if they think it's still Papelbon, okay, fine. But then you've got to be able to cobble together a different formula of middle relief for you to get you through the 6th, 7th, and 8th innings. Now, Lee and Hamels are going to probably give you 7 almost every night out, so that kind of closes that margin. But the other three guys are not going to close that margin for you. And again, what made the difference in the Pirates this year? Made the difference, and last year as well. The Pirates did a great job last year with their middle relief guys, whether it was Brian Morris or Tony Watson or whomever it happened to be. It seemed like every time Clint Hurdle pushed a button, he found a guy to step up and get him some outs. The Phillies haven't had that for a couple of years now, and that's an issue. That is an issue.
And Steve, one guy that I didn't mention in the outfield is one that they just started working out in center field this past year, and that's Hernandez. And I know you've seen him, was it back in 2010?
I like him.
Yeah, I mean, there's a decent bat, seems to have some decent skills in the outfield. But here's my question. They moved him up real, real quick. Is it too fast?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to depend on spring training for him. I mean, spring training will tell you whether you've moved him too fast and he needs more time in the minors or whether he's ready to go now.
I mean, keep in mind, in 2010, you were calling games in Williamsport he was playing in.
Right. No doubt. Yeah, no doubt. So...
Of all the outfielders, I would think that's, besides Brown, Hernandez is probably the number two guy on the list of future, anyway, for the Phillies.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think spring training will determine whether he's moved too fast or not. I mean, when they had him, I think at one point he was a shortstop. They made him a second baseman.
Yep.
And then they flipped him to the outfield when he's they flipped him to the outfield when he moved up through the minors. I think at Double A, I think at Reading is where they made him a center fielder permanently.
Actually, I thought it was Lehigh Valley because I think they dropped him down to Reading for a few games this past season to get him a little more comfortable in center field. If I
right.
But I may be it may be the other way around. But you're right. He was not a center fielder. Coming up in 2010 in Williamsport, he was an infielder, but
no. So I mean, you have to. The Phillies also have to make a determination of the guys that they've drafted and moved through the system. Do they think they have enough there? Or is there, you know, a guy like Cesar Hernandez? Darren Ruff certainly was with them the last half of last season. You know, so I don't know, and that's something that they have to determine as an organization.
Darren Ruff has the look of a hitter.
Yeah, he does. No question. And then there's Cody Ashe. Cody Ashe. Now this is one you talked about. You know, hey, you know, we just talked about Hernandez. Okay, we just talked about Hernandez. Now, Cody Ashe is a guy I didn't like when he was at Williamsport. You know, and, you know, sometimes the transition is tough and it takes a while. And I missed on him.
Yeah, I mean, they moved him up pretty quick, too, though, Steve.
Yeah, and they...
You know, because they have to at third base, I think. I mean, that's probably why they moved him up fast. But he was just in Williamsport, what was that, 2011?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And... He was a guy I didn't really get. I didn't really have a great handle on him. I just thought he was a roster filler at that point. How about that?
Well, I just looked up his numbers. He batted 192 in Williamsport in 2011. Then they moved him up to Reading, which I thought was really strange because if you bat 192 in single A ball, you don't often move up to double A. But somebody saw something because he batted 300 there in the same amount of games and a few more at bats. Then they brought him to Clearwater, and then he hit 349 in Clearwater, and then in the minors, 324 in 2012. And then the Phillies brought him up then between Lehigh Valley and Philadelphia in 2013.
Right.
Where he hit. Almost 300, I think, at Lehigh Valley, not quite, and just under, and then like 230 something in Philly, but only with maybe half the at bats he normally gets.
Right. Well, he's a guy that my feel walking away from him was I didn't think he'd make double A. Now he's in the majors, so.
Right now he might be the starting third baseman in the majors, too.
Exactly. So it just tells you. With maturity and adjustments, he's been able to mature and adjust, and it's something I just couldn't see or read when I saw him at Williamsport. We'll come back with more here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us today. Show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy family has been such an important part of the community and one of the reasons they've been able to garner so much trust with their clients over the years. If you are not part of the Purdy family right now, well, why don't you find out why so many others are and trust their insurance needs to them. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Again, go to purdyinsurance.com. And we've been talking about the Phillies a little bit today, a little bit about the BCS as well. But for Ohio State, that was a big loss in a lot of ways for them. They built to this moment, and then when they finally had the lead, could not put them away. Literally couldn't put them away. Because they had the lead. And you would think that with their running attack and their offensive line and their quarterback, they were in the prime spot to take care of business. They had scored 24 unanswered points to take the lead. Michigan State's defense played well enough, and they had more offense in this game than I thought they would have. Connor Cook played pretty well. and I thought looked really good in the game. They'll need it against Stanford. Now, Stanford, of course, Tyler Gaffney, the old State College Spike, is their tailback, and he'll get one more shot in the Rose Bowl against Michigan State. But we, it's one thing about Stanford. They play like a Big Ten team. The difference is they've actually played the style better than Big Ten teams. Kevin's all excited about Baylor and UCF. I will watch that game because Penn State opens with UCF.
That's right. You'll be using that as prep work.
Yeah, a little bit. That's if Bortles. I don't know if Bortles is staying or not. Bortles has rocketed up draft boards. He has rocketed up draft boards. And we'll see what he wants to do. That game, of course, would be the opener in Ireland at Crow Park next year.
I feel bad for Cincinnati having to go to Charlotte to take on North Carolina in the Belk Bowl. That's going to be almost like a home game. Actually, it will be basically a home game.
But, Kevin, you know what? In bowls for northern teams, these are all road games.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know, Ohio State, you know, I mean, Michigan State's playing Stanford in California.
Right, but I'm just saying that you're playing North Carolina in Charlotte.
Okay, well, Penn State played the Outback Bowl against Florida in Florida.
I agree.
I mean, these are all road games. Now, and that's something that doesn't get factored in. You're not asking Auburn, for example, to come up and play in Ford Field against Ohio State.
Pinstripe Bowl, though, I think is the best matchup to fill seats because of proximity with Notre Dame and Rutgers.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I'll watch some of that because Rutgers is in the conference next year.
It's all about work with you. Do you ever watch a game to watch a game? When did you stop being a fan?
I watched the Steeler game yesterday, and they threw a forward lateral.
Only on your TV.
No, only on an objective TV.
Didn't look that way on my TV.
My point exactly.